Hello, this is Clay Boykin, and I am in search of the new compassionate male. Recently, I had the opportunity to be interviewed by three women on the topic of patriarchy. Here's that conversation.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Sandy Hart, and along with Ann Smith and Pat Barrow, we welcome you to the Death Throes of Patriarchy, Demystifying the Effects of Patriarchy on Women and Men. This call is designed to address the systemic issues that create and keep patriarchy thriving, with dynamic discussions on creating a new story for humanity. This is the third call in our series, and previous calls included the emergence of the divine feminine and the transformational power of divine feminine leadership. All of our conversations in this series address the deep root system and impact of patriarchy, a condition of society that we believe is the end of an era whose time has come to change. Met with resistance and challenges represented by the thrashing tail of the dying dinosaur, this call also represents us with responsibilities and opportunities like this series and all programs that we do here at SARA. Today, I get to introduce somebody I consider a dear friend and colleague, Clay Boykin. Clay represents and states often through his work, the new compassionate male is emerging in the world as the new archetype. Clay is the founder of Circles of Men Project, author of Circles of Men, a counterintuitive approach to creating men's groups, and creator of the podcast In Search of the New Compassionate Male. Clay is also developing men at the Men and Boys Sector for the Charter for Compassion, and he works closely with Gender Equity Reconciliation International, an organization whose focus is on deep healing between women and men. And Clay is well known for his servant leadership approach to life. He leads workshops and retreats in the United States and Africa, and presently working on his new book, In Search of the New Compassionate Male, which I can't wait to read. Welcome, Clay.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
I think, Pat, you have the first burning question.
Well, this one is fun and easy, and it's so much fun that we got a chance to get to know each other better. So I know that this is, it seems that this is the essence of your work. And so the question is, how do you create a culture in your men's circles in which men talk about their feelings and vulnerabilities and address their capacity for connecting with their hearts?
That's a wonderful question. Let me share that what I've learned over the time is that there's six basic forms of men's groups. You know, there's the traditional Carl Jung based, there's the mythopoetic with the Robert Bly, there's the mass movement, you know, Louis Farrakhan, there's the neo-pagan, the guys are all running around in the woods. There's a traditional, which is kind of like the Knights of Columbus, let's say. And then there's one that is what I call the integrative reflective model. All of them, except for the integrative reflective, all of them work to break into the guy to get him into his heart. Now, that's a big generalization, and there's hybrids of all these groups. The integrative reflective model is for the guy that's already in his heart, and he's stuck, and he's trying to come out. He may have gone up through a recovery program, and he's looking for something at a little bit higher level, but he's not going to go back to organized religion because he got burned on that. And he can speak just so deeply with his wife or his partner, but there's still another level that he really needs to talk with another man about. But we are brought up not to trust each other. And so we're stuck and we're festering and we're dying and we're causing a lot of pain in the world. So he's stuck, and I'm describing myself. And so 8.5 years ago, I got to a place after being a prayer chaplain for a while, when I went into the New Thought Unity Church. I said, if other guys are feeling like this, then I need to get these guys together and let's figure this out so we can learn how to build trust. And so to your question, we did it totally different. That's, I call it counterintuitive, because again, this is what I needed. We formed a network and not a group. We have gatherings and not meetings. We have topics of conversation and not topics of discussion. No one's there to fix anybody or call anybody out. We're there to hold space for one another and to nurture one another. Now, that's kind of interesting. You don't typically think of men's group and the word nurture, but that's where it is. That's what I needed. And so over the past 8.5 years, that's what we've done. And it's grown in several circles and so forth. But what it does is it gives me the opportunity to move out of my head and go here and then learn the vocabulary so I can speak. Because I know I'm here, but I don't know how to express it. So connecting head and heart and then speaking it. And in that circle, we get do-overs because sometimes, you know, because we're practicing. And to begin to learn from one another that we're all wounded and we're all trying to figure this out and we're all trying to be better people. And in general, the circle principles, I love Patricia, you bringing that up, and the circle principles apply. And it's a safe space. So did that kind of answer the question?
It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
You.
And I think we'll keep moving with Sandy's question next.
Yeah, actually, it's really interesting. You know, you talk about being brought up not to trust one another in this condition. How do you raise boys now to have permission and opportunities and safe places for their feelings to be expressed for their full humanity? What does that look like?
You know, that's a huge question, because what I'm learning is that boys are growing up without a male role model at home. At school, most of the teachers are women. And so what happens is, in the absence of having a male role model, they begin to become what they call, what's called hyper-masculine, which is, oh, Rambo, oh, the football player, oh, this, oh, that. And they model themselves after what they see, as opposed to growing and being nurtured as a young boy with a father or father figure. You know, there's several organizations. It used to be the Boy Scouts was there to provide some of that and to provide some early life safe rites of passage with that structure and format, and bring in some of the, you know, indigenous tradition as well. And that's fallen away. Big Brothers, Big Sisters, you know, there's various organizations, but by and large, these boys are growing up without role models. Now, having said that, what I'm learning is, as I'm doing my podcast and reaching out, there are an incredible number of men's organizations out there. And there, one in particular, it's on Facebook. There are 5,000 men of all ages, and they're learning from one another. And the notion and the idea of, you know, how do I raise my kid, begins to get talked about there. But it is a huge issue. It's a huge issue. I know that former President Obama has got a program, and I can't think of the name of it, but it is to address just that very issue with young black men.
Right, so, because so much of this happens in the home. It can start in the home, but unless it's modeled out in the community.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And consistency.
And, you know, the single mom has got her hands full and she's doing everything she can, but she will always be his mother. She cannot replace father. That energy is just not there. And she can do it, get 90% there and do everything right. But he still has got to learn to bond with another man. learned that safety. And that's, you know, I was a latchkey kid. My parents were home. We had a loving family, but they both worked. And so I was alone when I went home. And I was told once that, well, if they weren't there when you needed them, that was technically you were abandoned. And I fought that because they were earning a paycheck and putting a roof over the head and everything. But so much of the time they were absent and we were left to our own to figure things out.
But you're here to talk about it now, and that's what mm-hmm. matters. And so developing those programs out in the community, too.
Yes.
Modeling it at home. And so that our young boys grow up in a safe place. And I will just add that I did a workshop years and years ago in Mexico, and I remember the men in the workshop speaking up about the machismo that they were so threatened by. They went, mm-hmm. they knew it. These young boys knew that there was something amiss.
That's so right. I ran into that in Kenya with the, I did a 3-day men's retreat there. When I went there, I thought to myself, you know, who am I, a privileged white Western male, to come over? And I said this to them, who am I, a privileged white Western male, to come over and think that I can teach you anything? You know, I'm here to share and to learn, and perhaps all of us can come out at a higher level than we came into this circle. And so I said, let me share my story. And I got on my knees, so I was eyeball to eyeball with them. And for the next hour, I was on my knees, sharing deeply and opening up. There was a lot of symbology in that, but it felt right. And they began to open up. And by the end of the 3 days, they were sharing at a deeper level than they had ever shared with one another. We had broken through because they grow up in a highly patriarchal system. And they're begging for the opportunity, because this void, this burn, to be able to say, I'm not the only person in the world with it, and to be able to share it and to learn from one another, and then to have an elder there to say, yes, you're on the right track, was beautiful.
Yeah, we speak so much about the importance of women's circles, mm-hmm. Brilliant circle. And for so long, women have needed to come together to find their power and their answers and their strength and their comfort in circles. And it's so underestimated and valued. And I thank you greatly for providing these spaces and these circles. And I'd like to see a million of these circles for boys.
That sounds great.
For boys, yeah. Mm-hmm. And speaking of millions of circles, millionth circle, I would just like to say Anne has brought into my life largely the power of circle through insisting and keep ushering me back. Often I need a lot of ushering back into the circle principles, or reminding about the power of circle. And she is considers herself a circle evangelist. So I know you have some important things to say about that, Anne.
Thank you for that introduction. Yes, I do call myself a circle evangelist, and I have a lot of fun with it. I see myself on, you know, the street corners with a tambourine, or maybe something like this, Gaia. You know, and I think we can all, women, we can all call ourselves not ladies or women or guys. We're Gaias, and this is kind of grows with what I want to talk about. We in the million circle really feel that we're close to a tipping point. And I think that when we've been looking at, and this is for all of you who have been a part of this sort of spiritual movement that is non-hierarchical, non-patriarchal, and values all creation. And there's no separation from us to creation because we're part of it. And they're very close to the tipping point, but it's not going to be in the news. You know, it's like the book that Blessed and Rest, you know, talked about all these small circles, non-hierarchical, and he left out all of the women's circles because he hadn't been in them when that book was written. So we are writing a new history, a new story. And Wendell Berry has this quote that is wonderful. Women and the earth are inseparable. And as one goes, so goes the other. And I'd always said when I was working in the Episcopal Church in the hierarchy, in the patriarchy, to a bunch of archbishops and bishops, not until we come up with a theology that embraces the divine feminine will we stop the rape of women and of the land. Well, in dead silence, glazed over eyes, didn't go anywhere. That's okay. We keep saying that message. We keep circling back to that message and how we are inseparable. And so for us as women who have been working so hard on these women's issues that are all issues, we have always asked, where are the men? If you're going to stop rape, if you're going to stop all of this violence against women, we need men as partners to be with us. We need the men to speak to other men. Because whenever we'd hold these conferences and hold these huge gatherings, it's just women. So I'm really grateful for Clay and for the men and for the work that you're doing. So how does the circles that you are doing and when addressing this issue or when you're talking to men help with the support of women and that connection of women in the earth?
So, gee, y'all have got some great questions. Thanks, Anne. What comes to mind for me is something that I've experienced, okay? So I'm going to speak for myself, but I have a feeling that it's more broad than just me. My sense is that women are more conscious than men. And for us to have a conversation, you know, you women need to come down to here. No, we men have got to come up to here. We have got to up our game. We've got to come so that we can be here to begin to work on the healing together. And so what my view of men's groups are, and at least for our group, is that we're doing that homework so that we can evolve to a place so that I can enter in and begin to understand how to have a relationship and how to heal between us. And Sandy talked about the Gender Equity and Reconciliation organization that I collaborate with. What they're all about is deep healing between women and men. It's creating a safe space, a safe circle, for women and men to come together and recognize that we are all wounded by the patriarchy. We have a sharing time and the men speak amongst the men and the women, and it's very deep sharing, things that I had never dared share in my life. And I started, and it just came up in me. I said, you know, I'm the privileged white Western male. I've got everything going for me. Well, let me tell you about my wound. You know, this is my wound. Not to compare wounds, but to recognize that we are, that's our common ground. However that wound looks, it's a wound. And we are both wounded by the patriarchy system. We boys are raised to climb the corporate ladder, you know, or raised to go to war, and that's our job. And, you know, we go die for the patriarchy. And then there's all kinds of other expectations that we live. So I'm kind of wandering a little bit, but I think that's what we're doing in our circle. And it was really interesting when I ran across the gender equity folks, because I was like, okay, we've got our guys in their hearts and integrating their head and heart, but where do they go next? And it is the gender equity is that space of deep healing between the women and men.
No, I was thinking of the stereotypes that we all had been sort of imposed on or imprisoned in for so long. Men are this and women are this, and little girls for one of the good signs that is coming is little girls for dress up as the princess for Halloween, right? Well, now one of the more popular Halloween costumes for the girls is Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So, the so I thought, wow, you know, there is progress. There's progress. And then one other thing that I know years ago, Sweden had where elementary children were to, for the first 3 years of elementary school, the boys had to do everything that the girls did, and the girls had to do everything that the boys did, also Norway. And it made them all compassionate, all nurturing, all caring, and then to decide what kind of role they wanted to, or not role, who they wanted to be. And we don't have that yet in America, but I see, you know, a little glimpse of it, and I'm really grateful for the Mankind Project and for all the work that that men are doing to really bring that gender equity, and that frees us both. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
Pat has a real juicy question, and I just want to thank you for your work.
No, so we're getting deeper and deeper, Clay.
Okay, so, here we go.
hold on to your Okay, so this question is, how do men become anti-patriarchal in similar ways that we whites are called to become anti-racist? And what is the role of men in dismantling patriarchy?
There's a couple of things that I'm thinking about. I'm wondering that, you know, the patriarchal system has got us where we are, both good and bad. And could it be possible that we don't kill the patriarchy because there's some good aspects of it, but we evolve it, call it something else. But there's some good pieces to it that I believe are healthy to have there. And how do men begin to change the patriarchy? I think the men have got to do, we've got to go in and first change ourselves. We have got to learn self-compassion, what that is about. We've got to do exactly what I was talking about earlier, because this burn and this void that's here, we don't understand what it is, but that's love and compassion. That's love in action. That's compassion that's there that we've pushed down. And so when we learn to open that up and then integrate that, then we begin to show up in the world. That's on an individual basis. You know, there's more institutional things that I got to be addressed, and I wouldn't begin to be able to answer that. And I think that's probably a different webinar. But speaking about men individually, it's to recognize that, again, that we're all wounded and to open up. And I think the younger men, I think they're further along. You know, they're growing up. I'm contradicting myself because earlier I said they don't have the mother figure, but there's another whole group of young men that are getting it, and they are showing up differently.
So. One of the thoughts I'm having about that is, in the first Women's March in D.C., there were so many beautiful young men pushing their babies and their strollers or on their backs and marching with the women. And that was a very beautiful experience.
I experienced that as well here in Austin, the Women's March here. And my wife and stepdaughter, and they were right up in the front of the crowd. And, you know, I wouldn't say it was 50-50, but boy, I tell you, there were a lot of men at all ages that were present showing up. So it's happening. It's happening.
In Los Angeles, there were a reported million people in the streets for that march. Mm. And it sure did appear that it was 50-50. And dogs, too. We saw people with their whole families and children. And the signs of support were remarkable. You know, the my wife is a feminist and I support her. Or there are so many creative signs. It was so fun to watch. Not one recorded incident of violence anywhere in the world with all those marches, which was a sign that the divine feminine was present in both genders.
Yes.
Do you find yourself in an environment ever where you have, whether it's work or at church or wherever, and this might be a tender question to ask, and we are being recorded, where you've had to say, well, wait, that's more of a patriarchal approach. Like, how could we look at this differently? Or calling somebody out as to Pat's really great question about relating it to being anti-racist. I have had to say that you see that as a racist comment you've just made. You know, do you ever find yourself in the position to say, do you see that's a highly patriarchal position you're taking? Is that a fair question to ask you?
Man, I don't know. I want to go back to the early 90s when I was at Motorola in the corporate environment. And I've always been kind of a counterintuitive thinker, and I'm not an engineer. So I had to find my space there. And what I found was that I could change cultures and organizations without using the word culture. And what I became was a change agent. They would parachute me into an organization and they would disguise me as the marketing director or the operations director. And I could fulfill those roles, but I couldn't do it technically. And what I brought into the organization, I would think of as, back then, I would think of it as heart. Today, I think of it as bringing spirit into the organization. And I did that with something called servant leadership. And it's all about taking care of the people. You know, it's creating an inspired vision, modeling the way, challenging the process, enabling others to act, encouraging the heart. Those are principles I learned in the Marine Corps. And bringing those into an organization, it wasn't a direct confrontation of, hey, that's patriarchal. But it was the general manager who saw what I was doing, and he said, come on in. And so we changed the culture. We brought heart into the organization. To put it in perspective, the organization, I think, was probably about a third women. And it was a $250 million organization. 3 years later, same size organization, most of the same people, we were $500 million. And the only thing that changed was the culture. The only thing that changed was we brought heart into the organization. So that's what came up for me, Sandy, when you talk about confronting patriarchy.
Before they went into white privilege of Peggy McIntosh's work way back when, she started out with male privilege so that you would have kind of a shopping list of what to look for to know that you are now getting more privilege than women. And they're small things. And then it's now gone into white privilege. Mm-hmm. And they're very helpful because it gets it out of so much of what is patriarchal. But what am I doing that I am using my white privilege that is not given to women of color? And so I'll give you just a couple of incidents. You know, and you've heard these. You know, a man will say something. No, a woman will say something in a meeting. And then a little while longer, a man says, and nobody pays any attention. And then the man said, and they'll say, great idea. This I certainly knew in the Episcopal Church, which is, you know, bishops and archbishops and priests. And there's a whole pecking order of clericalism. Mm-hmm. When we women would work very hard on being equal and all of this, a bishop would walk into the room and they'd all abdicate their power. It would be like, and until it was a woman bishop that would walk into the room. And boy, you know, you try to tell this male bishop what had happened so that they could be more conscious about it. And it's just like for us as whites, when we get confronted about something that we're using our privilege, the resistance and the anger is there. So it's not easy work, but I feel it has to, for me, it has to be done if we're going to have an equal, if we're going to really have equality.
Well, our advantage is to be able to have that equality because of the diversity that we bring into any situation. You know, again, something that I've learned along the way, I'm learning so much vocabulary in this search because I'm searching for the new compassionate male and I'm talking with everybody, you know, and it's like, what do you know about this? What about this? What's your perspective? You know? And along the way, I learned about holding the tension of opposites and recognizing, you know, in this particular example, if you have, you know, the male and the female, the man and the woman like this, if we can learn that that's advantage, you know, we can spend all day long trying to change each other. But if there's something up here that we both can aim towards and we can hold that tension of opposites and bring that resource to bear this way, then it's a win-win. And I believe that holding the tension of opposites, for that to work, it needs to be underpinned with compassion. So with that underpinning and with holding the tension of opposites, that's, I think, a way that people don't necessarily look at it, because it's like, well, the women don't get me, or the guys don't get me. You know, let's change the game. Let's change the narrative here and say, I love the fact that you're different. Now, that may be hard. You know, it's also an internal thing, holding the tension of opposites within myself. You know, we were talking, Patricia, you brought up the solar masculine and the lunar masculine. There's a tug of war right there. Well, you know, guys, you need to go into your hearts. What that translates to is, oh, leave my head behind. Hell no. It's both. It's yes and. It's an integration. But there's often that tug. So I've got to hold that tension of opposites within myself and know that I'm bringing myself completely into the world, to something greater than myself, and as well in whatever the environment is that I'm in. It's interesting, and that you talked about when a man walks into a room. You see Renee there? She's smiling and waving. I had her on one of my podcasts early on, and the title of it is When a Man Walks into the Room. and we had that conversation, and it was very enlightening to me, because I walk in, it's like, well, things are the way they always are. What I didn't see was what the room looked like before I came in. And thank Renee again, because it was a real eye-opener for me.
Yeah. When we have privilege, it's hard to see that we do have privilege, whether it's white, whether it's male, whether it is wealthy versus somebody who's not as wealthy. And then to be able to see it, because that is our experience, that is our surrounding. But to become aware of that so we can unpack that,
actually
doesn't need to be threatening. And it really is helpful when it is in a sacred circle. We're truly listening to one another, and we can make mistakes, and we can, you know, just say, oh, you know, when this happened. So it's all doable and, you know, very necessary.
Male privilege, you know, what's that? You know, I'm a fish in water asking what water is.
Right.
Right. And I had that experience, you know, I want to talk about this for a minute, when George Floyd was killed, when he was murdered. It was May 25th. And at the very time that was happening, our men's circle was happening. Now, we didn't know anything about it till the next morning. And the next morning happened and came about. And I know I went into shock. reflectively, I realized I was in shock at the time. And interestingly enough, the topic of our men's circle that night was aspirations. What are your aspirations? So here we were that night. There was like 20, that night they were all white. So 20 white males talking about what are your aspirations while George Floyd was out on the street being murdered. And I said, we can't go on like this. We've got to add something. And so we started another circle because we wanted to keep the sacredness of the circle that we have because that's serving its purpose. We started another circle on racism in America. And I asked if my prayer chaplain would join me on a podcast and talk. And he's black and he's gay. And he's talking about it and we're having this conversation. And I said, well, John, what do I do? And I was asking that question just to sincerely from the heart. And he said, don't ask me what to do. I've been studying you for 300 years. Go do your homework. And in the same vein, that's what we guys have got to do.
Yeah.
I can't turn to the woman and say, well, what do you want me to do? We do that, and that's a lose-lose conversation. That's what the men's work is to do with the men.
Thank you.
It's quite, if I can comment just a little bit, it's almost like an upside-down thing. In Anne's poem, it spoke about women's being taught that our world revolves around the man. We've had 3,500 years of that. And so now there's an upside down thing as we're looking at change that men are looking at, how do we think in terms of serving women? And it's very, you use the word counterintuitive. It's something that we have never really talked about very much. Just like we haven't talked about how do whites lift up blacks. We haven't talked about that. So it's a new thing. But I do notice that Dennis put in the chat, he wrote, this is the difference between zero sum, patriarchy, and synergy. So I like to sometimes think of the lunar male. I get you that head and heart. Cool. I agree. But the fully actualized male and the fully actualized woman, that's synergy. Absolutely, yeah. That's synergy. And that's the dance that Anne was talking about in the poem. So mm-hmm. That's where we're going, but it's hard work, and we don't know. If I can just say one more thing, Clay. I had a friend who wrote a book about patriarchy, and I said to him all the time, you have to write this book for us women, because we're like fish swimming in the water. We don't know. Because we're enculturated into it. We don't know patriarchy any more than you know patriarchy. So it's the same thing. It's the water that we're swimming in, and how do we become aware of what that water is? So
yeah, your beautiful work that's done. I mean, the common theme is you guys need to get into your hearts.
Mm-hmm.
To do our work, and this kind of goes back to a conversation we were having the other day, which is in the women, the divine feminine embracing the divine masculine within themselves.
Mm-hmm. Which is the solar feminine.
The solar feminine. And when we talked about that, that was a vocabulary that I had been looking for, and I'm still learning it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just the guys learning how to go into the hearts. It's the women embracing the solar feminine. We're in this together.
Absolutely.
We're in this together. And I was having a conversation yesterday with my wife, and I was trying to describe this to her. And she said, well, I'm a member of the Hildy Girls. And this is 50, 75 women that get together and sing and love on each other. And it's a wonderful organization. And she said, well, we work on that. We talk about that all the time. And I said, you do? Now, Laurie and I have been married almost 20 years. That was yesterday. It was the first time that the conversation turned to her, the conversations about the divine masculine within her and her being able to show up as herself in that way and learning how to do that in a women's group. Mm-hmm. So I just thought that was interesting.
Sandy's face is all lit up.
And holding, you know, this is such a peeling back at the onion. And it's so relative to white privilege. I see our sister Michelle here, who is in Alaska and you know, on occupied indigenous land, as I am on indigenous, as we all are, on occupied indigenous lands, a relationship with First Nations, with people of color, with men and women. You know, it's really quite interesting in that to think about this. And what it does is it allows us to keep our eyes and ears open. And I remember the first time I saw Stay Woke on a poster. And it just reminds us to stay woke to that water we're swimming in. And is it really the truth? Is it the truth we're telling ourselves?
Boy, Sandy, that brings up something for me. Can I share it? It was the fall of 2018 when you and I met at the Parliament of the World's Religions. And I was talking with the board chair for the charter, Charlie Barker, and introduced myself. And I said, Charlie, look at this. There are 10,000 people up here. And there's all these sessions going on, 100 sessions going on. And it's just all the energy is so great. But you realize that there's not one session on men?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, now, furthermore, the Charter for Compassion has got 12 sectors. Alphabetically, the last sector is women and girls that Sandy ran. Where's the men and boys sector? So it's so right in front of us, so obvious, but we don't see it. Neither men nor women see it, and that's when our relationship began. And I said, my vision for the charter is that there be a men and boys sector. And Charlie said, I like that. Why don't you write it? I said, I can't write it, but I can create the conversation. He said, well, you saddle up next to Sandy Hart and she'll show you the ropes. And Sandy said, and I want to say it, she said, well, that's kind of poetic. It's kind of like the women are giving birth to the men. And I said, you're right. And I've learned so much by being engaged with the women and girls sector. Just, you know, listening and learning and then offering, you know, what I had to offer. It has really been an underpinning for the work that I'm doing with the circles of men that I've got and the work that I'm doing in the world now.
And, you know, it was the exact same condition that I was on a volunteer staff call and I said, hey, wait, where are the women and girls? And that's when the women and girls developed. So it's just paying attention to those opportunities, those crevices, looking for those crevices, those staying woke to what needs to be done. And we're in the wild, wild west now. We've got this wild frontier, wide open spaces to create what needs to be showing up right now to usher out, like was said in the very beginning of this call, this era of a time whose time has come to change. And what can we do? And you're providing space and you're providing sacred space and asking these questions and peeling back the onion. And thank you to everybody who's here showing up, listening, and perhaps you too are peeling back a layer or two and or at least we'll hear it. Now, bells have been rung. You can't unhear them.
Yeah, let me share something, and I'm going to fumble a little bit about this, and I want to get your ideas on it. Richard Tarnas talks about there being three myths, grand myths, or paradigms in the world. There's the myth of human progress, the myth of the fall, the myth that is no pattern. So the myth of progress is the patriarchy. The myth of the fall is the failings of the patriarchy, the rape of the earth, and everything else that we've been talking about, and the fact that we are destroying ourselves. In the midst of our success is our failing. And then the third being the myth of no pattern, which is, it's all random anyway, don't worry about it, let's go get a beer. Yeah, can't do anything about it. I submit that we're in the midst of a new mythology that and what came up for me actually just this morning was, everybody's been talking about we're in the liminal space. How often have you heard that in the recent months, right? We are in the myth of liminality. We are living the myth of liminality. Liminality is a description for being in the liminal space. And how many times have we heard, when things change? Well, folks, what I'm realizing, at least for me, is it's not out there. It's right here, right now. We are living the myth of liminality. And that really put it in context for me. I don't know. I'd be interested in your thoughts on that.
Well, it's called
the meme already made up. Quoting you on that meme. Sorry, Pat.
Well, it's what we've talked about for so long in our spiritual circles, co-creating a
yes.
new with the divine human co-creating the new.
Yes.
And that's mm-hmm. what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard it, and I don't know where I heard it, so I can't give credit, but what we're asking for is a cosmic shift, not a cosmetic shift. And for so long, our country was built on a cosmetic democracy. Mm-hmm. And now we're finding out we got to have this cosmic shift that only can do be from the heart and through spirituality. And, you know, what is in the heavens is below and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I love that. And I don't know what, we got to find out who said it because I want to give them credit.
Well, you're right. And the universe is conspiring in our favor.
Yes.
I don't know, but this much about astrology, but everywhere I turn, they say the planets are aligned. And what I'm learning is that's not metaphor, people.
No.
That there's truth and wisdom to that. And so we are being given this opportunity. And we're going through our dark night of the soul right now. You know, and in the hero's journey, we come out.
Thank you, Clay, for your wisdom. You know, you and I have so many conversations. Even today, I had so many breakthroughs and so many ahas, and I remain woke because of you. Thank you so much. And to my cohorts, Pat, Farrow, and Ann Smith, it's simply a thrill to be able to manifest these sort of programs with you.